I have a take, though. Say James Conner and Kyler Murray are healthy the entire year, which is an if, especially for James Conner. If that happens, what's the difference really between Chase Edmonds and Devin Singletary?
Ooh.
Like, seriously.
It's time to fade the chalk.
Fade the chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, and with me, as always, my co-pilot, Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, are you ready to discuss the NFC West today, dude?
Yeah, so listen, I know that this is a football podcast, and I know that you're not the, you know, the huge NBA fan like I am, but...
Nope, I am not.
did you see what Damian Lillard did last night at all? Like, do you have any idea?
I did not, but I saw Twitter talking about it. I did see that.
My God. You need to just go watch what that meant. He's unbelievable, and I honestly feel inclined to talk about it, but no, NFC West, man, you can make the case that this is the most loaded division in the NFL. Like, all four of these teams have a chance to win this division. I don't think any team, I think all four of these teams have a chance to make a run too. They're all very talented. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about San Francisco. They're going to be healthy this year. So this is, in my opinion, you said the NFC East, maybe the most interesting division in football. I think this is the best division of football, and I would say it's also the most interesting. It's loaded from top to bottom, especially with a lot of these teams getting better and, of course, San Francisco getting healthier.
Dude, it's going to be interesting, man. I will not be surprised if we have, like, obviously multiple teams going to the playoffs and fighting mm-hmm. for final wild card spots. Like, you look up and down this division, it's going to be offensive fireworks. It's going to be – and not – some of these defenses are quietly bad. I mean, we'll get into it, man. So let's kick this off, dude. Heading to LA, talking about the Rams. I'm going to let you start this segment, okay? Because you know where I stand. I have been driving the bus. I'm still there. Love him to death. How high are you on Cam Akers this year?
Yeah, I think he's clearly a top 12 running back. Like, there was that stretch where he... you know, looked like he was going to be a bust. But we have to remember, in week one against Dallas, he was the starter. He started the game. He was getting the goal line touches, and he got hurt. And then Daryl Henderson was the guy. And then Cam Akers finally got back into the lineup. And from week 12 or week 13 on, he was great. And if you include the playoffs, because they made a little bit of a playoff run, weeks 13 to 18, Cam Akers averaged, you know, over 21 carries per game. He was an absolute definition of a workhorse. He was getting a ton of goal line work. He had 86 carries in those four games. That is massive, massive volume. He's not going to be like an elite receiver, but he's definitely going to catch passes. During that same span, he had seven carries from inside the five. Like, he was an absolute definition of a workhorse. And going into this season, Malcolm Brown's not there, who they would play a lot in passing situations, two-minute drills, and sometimes in the goal line. That's out of the equation now. Daryl Henderson, I like as like where he's going, because they still like him, and Daryl Henderson's been pretty good when he's been on the field. So if anything happens to Cam Akers, Daryl Henderson has top, you know, 15 upside. But yeah, I mean, this team still wants to run the football. They were top five in run rate last season. I don't think adding Matthew Stafford changes that too much. The offensive line, which you were kind of all over this time last season, where everybody was worried about it. They were one of the most impressive offensive lines last year, because Andrew Whitworth at age 40 was really good. They got good contributions elsewhere. They were a pretty good run blocking offensive line. So yeah, Akers is clearly a top, you know, 12 running back, depending on where you have him in that like 7 to 12 range. That's up to you. But yeah, he's going to be, you know, a top 24 pick in pretty much every format. And I'll tell you what, in some of these best ball drafts, he's going in the first round. He went one spot ahead of me at 109. I was at 110, and I got Zeke. So, like, there's definitely hype on Cam Akers, but it's, if you watched him play last year down the stretch, you know why.
I mean, it's all deserved, dude. And yes, I mean, come on, Adam. Let's wind the clock back a little bit, because I want to revel in this a little bit, because you and I are very transparent on social media on this podcast. We will own the L's, but also I want to talk about the W's for a second here. We sat here and talked to Brandon Thorne on this podcast, went through offensive lines. I trashed and talked about how garbagey, like, all the narratives were about the Rams' offensive line, and everybody was like, oh, but the PFF grades, you know, you gotta fade them, right? They won't be able to run. Let's look at this, baby. They were 7th in adjusted line yards last year. You look at second level yards, 17th, open field, 15th. Are any of those marks near the bottom of the league, Adam? Please tell me. Are they? Were the Rams so terrible?
There's 32 teams in the NFL, so the bottom of the league would be like 25 to 30, and the numbers that you mentioned were higher than that, so I'm going to say no. Also, according to PFF's run blocking grades, they were 4th behind the Colts, San Francisco, and the Browns, so they were very good.
Oh, the vindication is sweet, my friend. It's like putting on a silk robe. Oh. It's glorious. But you're talking about Cam Akers, dude. Yes, I'm back in. He's a lock, set, forget RB1 for me this year. You want to sit here and put him in the top 10? Let's go. Let's have that conversation. Because the Rams were 2nd in the NFL in red zone rushing rate. The touchdown equity is definitively there. And the other thing that people talk about, and yes, I'm not, when I say I love Cam Akers, I'm not throwing shade at Darrell Henderson, but if we're talking about overall skill sets, Cam Akers is a better running back than Darrell Henderson. It's just facts, people. I'm sorry if you don't want to hear it. I'm sorry if your poor truth or heart is demolished by me saying this, but these are facts. And the Rams trusted Akers as a workhorse, dude. So weeks 13 through 17, he ran a route on 53% of Goff's dropbacks. You fast forward to the playoffs when it counted the most. He ran routes on 83% of his dropbacks, dude. A guy that averaged 22 carries per game over the final 6 weeks. And yes, I think Matthew Stafford is going to, he is the tide that raises all ships, raises all things in this offense. And people are like, well, are they going to pass more? They're going to pass more, but not for the reasons that you think they're going to pass more. It's because the pace is coming back. Like, they were 12th in neutral script pace. You look at the last time that Jared Goff was even somewhat of a competent quarterback and Sean McVay covered up for all of his boo-boos. They were top 5 in neutral script pace in the NFL. So they are going to pass, but not because the passing rate's going to go up. Like, when Todd Gurley was ripping up the damn league, they had a 41% neutral script rushing rate in 2017 and 2018. Now, you go back to last season, at 41%, the numbers check out, baby. Like, they are going to throw the ball, but it's because their play volume and their pace is going to be fantastic. And so, yes, I am firmly back in on Cam Akers. I'm in on him being a workhorse. I think Henderson's going to have a role. And if you want to take him as a handcuff, you want to go zero RB and go down that road for best ball and redraft, that's fine. I'm not going to hate on that because if it ain't Akers, it's going to be Darrell Henderson. So I am on the side that Cam Akers can stay healthy because if you're projecting, and I know injury Twitter is undefeated. I get that because everybody, we all heard about that with Will Fuller and multiple players last season. How'd that work out for you? I'm not projecting injury, so I'm back in on Cam Akers, dude. And I talked about Matthew Stafford, talked about how the pace is coming up. What do you see his impact for this offense? Like, are you with me? You think they're going to run a ton of plays? And what does this do for all these pass catchers?
I don't think I'm breaking any news here to say that Matthew Stafford is better than Jared Goff. But but in all seriousness, like, Stafford is going to be more aggressive.
Yes.
Like, I talked about it when we were doing the NFC North episode with the Lions and Jared Goff and how, like, 7% of his passing attempts last year were of the deep variety. It was one of the lowest rates in the NFL. 7.8% of Jared Goff's pass attempts last year, 20 yards or more down the field, one of the lowest rates in the league. Almost 51% of his pass attempts last year were of the short variety. That was a top 5 rate in the league. So Stafford, this offense is not going to suddenly become the air raid or, you know, Bruce Arians type, you know, a downfield passing attack, but they're going to take more shots down the field. And I think Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, like, I don't think it's like one or the other that's going to fit that mold. I think both are. Robert Woods can play all over the field. Cooper Kupp primarily in the slot, but he can win downfield. Like, he's done that. And then you add, you know, guys like DeSean Jackson and Tutu Atwell, who are nothing more than kind of like flyers for fantasy. But I just think it's going to open up the offense more. hell, that might even help Cam Akers more if they're actually attacking down the field. So I think just the overall efficiency of the offense is going to be better. I mean, I've talked about it if I haven't talked about Marvin Jones, it's been Robert Woods. I mean, these are like two of my favorite receivers ever. Robert Woods, the most underrated receiver in the league next to Marvin Jones, in my opinion, just produces every year. Now he gets a quarterback upgrade. And, oh, by the way, he has like the sneakiest rushing upside at receiver that nobody ever talks about. So, yeah, Robert Woods, once again, in my top 15 at receiver. Cooper Kupp, the touchdowns like were down last year. Those, we know those can come back up because he's been, yes, he's been a red zone weapon and they've had the rapport with Goff, but Cooper Kupp is also just a skilled touchdown scorer. Just watch him play. So I think you have to feel good about both these receivers. And yeah, Matthew Stafford, I mean, in this offense that made Jared Goff look good at times, I mean, Stafford has, you know, back end quarterback one upside still too. He's not going to throw the ball as much as he did in his heyday with the Lions, but good offensive line. Great, offensive pieces around him. So the problem I have with Stafford for fantasy, and I was looking at this last night and really thinking about it, and it's crazy, right? A couple years ago, we're talking about the quarterback position in fantasy. It's like, okay, just wait. Just wait and get Matt Ryan. Just wait and get whoever, right? A couple years ago. Mm-hmm. The problem with that now is if you wait too long, there's all these quarterbacks that are going in the top 8 to 10 among most consensus quarterback ranks. They're all giving you something on the ground.
Yep.
Stafford's not doing that. And I think that really hurts, especially nowadays, because you look across the board, right? Mahomes is giving you something with his legs. Dak is. Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Kyler obviously absolutely are. Russell Wilson is. Herbert is. Hurts obviously is. Burrow pre-ACL is. We'll see about this year. Like, that's tough. And then who knows if Deshaun Watson plays. We know he is. Justin Fields, Tua. Like, that's the only thing that's hurting Stafford for me. But just in terms of the offense, I love Stafford. I think he's been one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the NFL for years. So I'm excited to watch him here.
It's going to be good, man. I can't wait to see him unleashed, dude, because as good as he was with Bevel and all the elements of that offense and stuff, and we saw him as a top 5 per game quarterback, I think he's going to open up so many different things. We're going to see this Rams offense get back to being high-flying, being high-scoring. It's going to be so damn good. And I love the point you made about getting back to Cam Akers real fast before I jump into these wide receivers. I love the point that you made about Stafford opening up the field, because Cam Akers quietly, Jared Goff was a poison for the running game, dude. Like, you go to Cam Akers and you look at when he was on the field last year, he was top 5 in defenders in the box. 7.3 defenders in the box when he was on the field. They were 8th in stacked fronts, and even base fronts, 6th. He didn't see light fronts only on 14.5% of his carries, and that was 61st amongst all running backs. That's going to change with Matthew Stafford under center. It is definitively going to change because defenses are going to have to respect the deep ball. They're going to have to respect the passing game. And last year, Adam, we saw the defenses, the opposing coordinators, they did not respect any part or piece of Jared Goff's game. And they shouldn't have, because he's allergic to throwing deep. He's allergic to throwing into contested situations. He's allergic to just being a good, competent NFL quarterback these days. So I think Matthew Stafford is going to be fantastic for this offense. I'm with you. Robert Woods is in for a good season. I am really, really bullish on Cooper Kupp. Like, I love him for this year. He is the red zone weapon for the passing game. Really, really high on him. I mean, head over to FTN Fantasy. Check out where I have him ranked. You might be a little bit surprised. And if you hate me for it, go look at the other articles that I have on the site. I have Cooper Kupp mentioned in multiple articles, both free and behind the paywall. Cooper Kupp is in for a great season this year. I'm really surprised, like, how much love I am hearing about one of the pass catchers in this offense, because I'm really not in on it. Like, I talked about Woods, talked about Cooper Kupp. Why? Why are we going back down for the hype train for Tyler Higbee? Why are people in on that? Because, like, for all of these reasons I've talked about that I love all the other pass catchers in this offense, Tyler Higbee is still going to have his snaps and routes cut into. Just because Gerald Everett left doesn't mean that similarly athletic Bryson Hopkins, who I understand did not play a role in this offense, but again, Gerald Everett was here, and woohoo, They drafted Jacob Harris, who is a freaking size speed mutant who can play in the pass game as well. He's probably going to play more on special teams, but he's going to factor in here because they're converting him to tight end. Why are people not factoring this in, Adam? Or are you on the Higby train? Like, do you think he's just going to have all the snaps, all the routes? Because I do not see that. I don't. And I can't rank him as a top 12 guy based off of what I'm projecting.
Tyler Higby has played 6 good games in his career. It was that stretch to end 2019 where he was unbelievable.
Yep.
Tyler Higby last year played 15 games. He was 22nd among all tight ends in routes run. He led the tight end position in run blocking snaps. 309. The Rams are still running the football. I think Tyler Higby, there's a popular like opinion that with Gerald Everett gone, this is going to unleash Tyler Higby. I think it's a trap. I think he's going to run block a ton. And again, we talked about it a million times. You want your tight ends running routes. So, yeah, I'm completely off of Tyler Higby. I've talked a million times about the tight ends that I have over him. The guys we've already talked about, Cole Kmet, Adam Trautman, Anthony Firkser. Like, I just don't see a ceiling with him. Like that stretch to end 2019 is, it was fluky. It was a thing of the past. It's gone. That's not coming back.
Let me give a little more context about that stretch, because I was out in the streets last year talking about that stretch of games and why that was not coming back and they were going to run more. Cause remember last year, like, oh wait, we're rehashing all of these dead tired narratives that people just so quickly forget. But they were buying into all of this garbage last year. And they're like, well, yeah, but Tyler Higby and 12 personnel and the Rams. If you head over to FTN Fantasy, you go through all of the, like, my articles last year and dig up my head coaching profile series for the Rams. People do not understand how bad their offensive line was. And when I say bad, I mean, it was absolutely demolished by injuries in 2019. That stretch of games was not coming back, was never coming back. In 2020, it didn't come back. Like, legit, Adam. In 2019, Havenstein was out. Whitworth was out. They lost one of their guards. They lost their other guard. They traded for a guard and played him at center. Their entire offensive line through a stretch of that season was all hurt. They were playing backups. They were playing rookies in positions, and I'm blanking on the guy's name. He was drafted as either a center or a guard or a tackle, and they moved him inside to guard in a position he had never played in college or anywhere. Maybe high school if you go all the way back to that. So all of the Tyler Higby stuff was bad then, and it's bad now. And if people are going to buy back into it, I'm sorry, but I don't get it. I can't understand it, and I'm not going with it.
He had 5 touchdowns last year. 3 of them came in that game against the Eagles. So, like, again, you want to talk about fluky games. He's 28. The Rams added pass catchers. Whatever you think of, you know, DeSean Jackson and Tutu Atwell, like, they added a ton of pass catchers. Plus, like you mentioned, they added Bryson Hopkins and Jacob Harris. So, for me, it's really not even discussion for me with Tyler Higby. No. Like, I won't. Even if I completely fall asleep at the wheel at the tight end position when drafting, I will find somebody else that's actually going to run routes.
Yep. I can't. I will not have Tyler Higby in redraft. I will not have him in best ball. And you can come at me if you got a problem with that. Follow me on Twitter at @dbro_ffb. My DMs are open, baby. I am not sitting here drafting Tyler Higby. Not going to do it, man. Moving over to the Cardinals, dude. This team is going to run a lot of plays because they did it last year and they're going to be back there this year. Before we jump into the pass catchers, what are your thoughts on these running backs? Like Chase Edmonds, James Conner, are you in on one, both at their ADPs? Or are you just like, no, if I want rushing equity, I'm going Kyler or it's nobody? Where do you stand on this, dude?
I'm just going to use the New England Patriots approach and just draft whoever's going later. And I think the gap is starting to tighten, right? Like, Chase Edmonds was super hyped when Kenny and Drake signed with the Raiders. And the whole time, I was actually expecting the Cardinals to maybe draft someone like Travis Etienne if he was there in the second round. That obviously didn't happen. But then they bring in James Conner. I think Chase Edmonds is a flex option being drafted as a running back too. That's, I understand his skill set and everything. He has the upside. But we have not seen the Cardinals want to use him as anything more than a rotational running back. I don't see that changing this year. Like, I know James Conner has missed a ton of time, and I know that there's upside in this offense, but, like, you look at Kyler got hurt in, week 11 last year with the shoulder, and that was when, after that, we saw Kenyon Drake was really good in fantasy because he was scoring a lot of touchdowns, but that was because Kyler wasn't running. Like, if you look at the splits from Kyler after his shoulder injury, or when it happened, his rushing numbers, his red zone shots, they all absolutely plummeted, and Kenyon Drake took advantage of it. He had six from weeks 11 to 17. He had six touchdowns from inside the five, which we know is Kyler territory for a ton of it. He scored a ton of touchdowns. Like, I just, if Kyler's right, those touches or touchdowns are either going to him, or I think James Conner's probably going to be the goal line running back. And yes, Edmonds is a really good pass catcher, but I think the Rondale Moore addition could hurt Chase Edmonds as a pass catcher a little bit. So I'm definitely lower on Chase Edmonds than most. I do think he's more of a flex option than a running back too. I understand the upside. I understand the high pace offense. I understand, you know, being in this offense with Kyler Murray leads to efficient touches and everything like that. But for me, I just think he's a little bit overvalued right now.
And I get that, man. As I'm hearing you, like, parse through all of Chase Edmonds' stats and stuff like that, I think I'm going to be dropping him in my ranks a little bit, to be honest with you. I mean, you look at last year's usage. He only got one carry inside the five, Adam. One. And inside the 10, you're looking at Kenyon Drake at 35.
I wonder if it was the game, because I know he started the Miami game when Drake was out, mm-hmm. and he was underwhelming. And then it was the Monday night game against Seattle. It was like the fourth quarter, and Drake got hurt, and then Edmonds was in the rest of the game. So, like, yeah, it wasn't – I can guarantee that carry wasn't because they really planned on giving it to him, so to speak.
Well, and you look at, like, so Kenyon Drake had 21 carries inside the five. You even zoom out to inside the 10. Kenyon Drake, 35. Chase Edmonds, 3. Could this flip? Like, it's possible. I think Edmonds is still viable, and I'm willing to take a few shots on him in that RB2 range, and this is why. I understand the Rondale Moore issues, but the other thing about that is they're going to run four wide, and with Rondale Moore, I think that could his targets come in the same area of the field as Chase
Edmonds?
That's my concern. That's possible. I'm not going to say that it's not. The other thing about it is, like, and I want exposure to it because Chase Edmonds, we know, has that passing down role. I mean, last year, he was 7th in routes run amongst all running backs, 6th in targets. He didn't score a ton of touchdowns, dude. I mean, like, he got 4 receiving touchdowns, but only 1 on the ground. So, in this offense, fast-paced unit, like, if James Conner can't stay healthy, and Chase Edmonds is going to be the guy back there at least in a few weeks, I think that he still can pay off where he's going in drafts, because in a lot of spots, he's going as like RB 26, 27-ish. You're not having to draft him inside the top 24.
And that I'm okay with. Like, I have him lower than consensus. He's my running back 27. But, like, if he's going there, then, yeah, there's obviously upside, especially if Conner misses time. I have a take, though. Say James Conner and Kyler Murray are healthy the entire year, which is an if, especially for James Conner. If that happens, what's the difference really between Chase Edmonds and Devin Singletary?
Ooh.
Like, seriously.
That's
seriously.
I don't disagree with you. That's a good one, man. I don't have any pushback for that. I mean, there's really not, because you're talking about a running back that if he gets pass game usage, he gets 12 to 15 touches a game, and he has no touchdown equity if Kyler gets them all.
It's the same player.
That's a good take. I like that, dude.
An offense with a quarterback that's going to take touchdowns from inside the five-yard line. An offense that I think still wants to throw the ball more in Arizona. We obviously know Buffalo wants to throw the ball more. You have a running back next to him who we expect to get the goal line work, but it's still going to be limited goal line work compared to other running backs because of the presence of the quarterback. So Zach Moss is pretty much the James Conner in this situation. It's like a carbon copy. That's all I'm saying. And nobody wants to draft Devin
Singletary. Let's zoom
out to this. Nobody wants to draft Devin Singletary.
Let's zoom out to this a little bit more. I think like you're hitting on an amazing parallel here. Are the Arizona running backs just the expensive version of the Buffalo backs? Like, is that the case? Like, are they both just stay away?
That's kind of what I'm getting at here.
Like, I mean, seriously, should we just be avoiding both of these backfields and just investing in the pass catchers in these offenses?
And that's the other thing. Like, you can't sit here and, like, love Kyler in fantasy and also love Chase Edmonds. They do not correlate.
Nope. No,
like,
they
Kyler's
don't.
Not
they
throwing
really
35 touchdowns this year, and 8 of them are going to Chase Edmonds out of the backfield. Like, I don't
disagree with you, man. It's a great point. I really, really love this take, man, because I think it's a really good point. And conversely, if we're lower on these running backs, then should we be higher on these pass catchers? Like, yes, we already know DeAndre Hopkins
is
going
to
be a wide receiver
one.
We don't need to talk about him. We know Hopkins is a wide receiver one. He's going to get one metric ton of targets. That's going to happen.
His advanced target metric is a shit ton.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Excuse me. Let me bring that back. Yes, it's one metric shit ton. Excuse me. But moving over to these other wide receivers, are we not giving enough love to Rondale Moore and Christian Kirk, dude? Like, they're both going really late in drafts. There's a lot of instances where both of them are going outside the top 150 players in best ball right now. And you and I have talked about this off air in our company Slack and DMs, all kinds of stuff. I'm in on both of them. I think that you can stack both of them late. I really like both of them right now, because if Kyler has ceiling weeks, if we believe in the pace, and again, like you alluded to, which is really, really good, if we're lower on the running back, should we be higher on the pass catchers? So yes, at cost, give me Rondale Moore. At cost, give me Christian Kirk. This offense is going to pass. They're going to run a lot of plays. They're going to run a lot of four wide. And Larry Fitz ain't there no more. And I'm sorry, Keyshawn Johnson is not a thing. They don't have a tight end to speak of. These three wide receivers are going to get some work, man. They are.
Yeah, I mean, they ran more four wide than any other team in the NFL. So playing time is going to be there for Rondale and Kirk and AJ Green, but I don't think we're really high on AJ Green.
No. I meant to miss right. him because he's dust. He's gone. He's not even a thing. Like he's a corpse out there. He's basically going to do his best DeMarcus Robinson impression. He's fit bitten this year, baby. That's all he's doing.
Fit bitten. Love it. yeah, and I'm interested to see how they use Rondale Moore, because in Purdue last year they used him very sparingly down the field, and they were just kind of manufacturing touches for him because he was clearly their best and most dynamic player. I don't think that means that Rondale Moore can't win deep, but when you have DeAndre Hopkins and Christian Kirk, like, and Rondale Moore can fit this scheme and just they can use him on jet sweeps and stuff. He's an elite, like, late round flyer in redraft, and then dynasty, the ceiling is obviously massive because I think Kirk's on a contract year right now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, you're right.
AJ Green's not going to be there long. Fitzgerald is not going to be there long. I don't even know if he's going to be back this year. Is he retired yet? I feel like we've been waiting on this.
He's still on the ether. We don't know what he's doing. So I don't think he's probably going to come back, but you know.
There's a very good chance that this time next season, Rondale Moore is the number two receiver opposite DeAndre Hopkins. So yeah, in dynasty, he's obviously, you know, a top, you know, 20 pick or whatever in rookie drafts. And yeah, you talked about like stacking late receivers from the same team in best ball. And I mean, Kirk and Rondale Moore, that's a high upside one for sure. So,
dude, I mean, if you garner 5 to 6 ceiling weeks, and I don't think it's being crazy because we hadn't even talked about Kyler Murray, man. Like,
yeah,
he's freaking good last year. Before you kind of get into it, because I want to hear your love list take. I want to hear what you got
to
say about it.
No, I don't really have anything to say. It's just common sense. He's ridiculous in fantasy, and he's going to get better as a passer, and that's going to lock everything.
People out there need to hear this. They need to understand how stupidly good Kyler Murray was to begin the year before he got hurt last year. Weeks 1 through 11, this is his weekly finishes. And oh my God, I got to prepare myself to read off this list. This is his weekly finishes as a fantasy quarterback. QB5, QB5, QB6, QB9, QB5. Are you sensing a trend here? QB3, QB2, QB1, QB2, QB10. In those first 11 weeks, Adam, he was a top 10 fantasy quarterback in every single damn game. And in 7 of those, he was top 5. Like, oh my lord. That's insane production. And then after the injury, QB25, QB18, 13, 4, 20, and 33. That split is insane. It's ridiculous. If Kyler Murray's healthy for a full season, oh mama, he is going to break some records. He is going to be awesome in fantasy. I mean, as high as people are, they're probably still not high enough on Kyler, man. Like,
he has legitimate, it's gonna be awesome. Like, 4,000, 1,000 upside.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. He could break
and with that things. And with that extra game, like, I would, like, have no surprise element to myself if that happened. If he threw for 4,000 and ran for 1,000, I would just be like, oh yeah, he did, and I'd move on because he's
and
that
that's going to allude to my. So I have an article dropping later today, diving into NFL futures over on Prize Picks, which they had rookie futures earlier in the offseason. Now they have the veterans out there. There are some really good lines to sit here and take advantage of them. And a sneak peek, man. One of them is Kyler Murray's passing yardage mark. And you're going to be really curious on where I'm sitting on it because it's juicy. It's awesome. So check that out, man. It's going to be dropping later today. Moving on to Seattle. We talked about the splits for Kyler Murray. My lord, the splits for Russell Wilson last year, weeks 1 through 9, this team was second in the NFL in neutral script passing rate. Now, weeks 10 through 17, that dropped from 63% to 58%, and old Pete decided we're going to run the ball, baby. Where are you at on Russ? Are they going to let him, like, really get unleashed? Is that ever coming back, or is that just, like, an apparition and we never see it again, dude?
It depends on if Pete Carroll wants to win football games, because Seattle was rolling in the beginning of the season. Russell Wilson was the clear-cut MVP of the NFL, and I remember it was every single, like, Monday after the games, there was like it showed the numbers of Seattle was right up there with like Buffalo in terms of teams percentage of passes on first down. Like they were throwing and they were throwing early in games and early in downs, regardless of game script. And then that stopped in the second half, like completely. And then you hear all the stuff in the offseason about Pete Carroll saying, yeah, we want to run the football still. And I get it, but then I don't. I mean, Russell Wilson, if Aaron Rodgers is back in Green Bay next year, Russell Wilson is clearly, like, at best the quarterback 7 for me, just because the top 5 are solidified with Mahomes, Dak, Allen, Lamar, and Kyler, and I would still put Rodgers at 6 or Herbert at 6. I haven't decided yet. It depends. I do like Herbert over Russell Wilson, but, like, yeah, Russell Wilson, like, until we see that, and it helps because he's been one of the most efficient quarterbacks we've ever seen. On a per drop back basis for fantasy, so that helps obviously, but like he's not going to be able to compete with Dak and some of these other players if he's got 27 pass attempt games, and apparently they're one of the, I don't know, 17 teams linked to Julio Jones. You would think if they give up, you know,
they're not. I
don't think they are either.
They're not trading for Julio. That's a bunch of shit. Like, they're not trading for Julio. That's not happening, man.
I don't see how they do it either.
No, that's Julio's camp or the Falcons or somebody sitting here pulling the strings and saying, oh, dance, puppets, dance! That's Julio's not going to Seattle. That's not happening.
Yeah. But with Russ, like, you know he's going to be good. It's just, is he going to be able to get in that top 5 or 4 or 3 with limited passing attempts? Because we know with how efficient, if you told me right now Russell Wilson was going to throw the ball 40 times a game, he would be up there with these guys. He's that good. He's as good as these guys. Yeah. We know that. It's just, especially because, like, Wilson runs, which helps, but, like, he's not going to run as much as Kyler or Lamar. He's not going to score as many rushing touchdowns as Allen because he doesn't really run from in close. So it's annoying for us, and it's got to be annoying for Seattle fans, but it's just we haven't seen it, and I don't think I don't think taking Dwayne Eskridge with one of your early picks really changes that philosophy, because they can use him in the run game or in the return game as well. So if they let Russ cook, he's going to be great. If they don't, he's going to be really good. It's just the ceiling might be capped a little bit.
I think the ceiling's capped, dude. Like, I don't see them going back to that. And we could talk about, like, you know, oh, well, did teams know what was going to happen? I mean, there's all this different stuff that's come out, like, oh, they knew we were just going to run deep, and they knew we were going to do these other things. It's like, so you're telling me, like, in that, okay, we stopped passing because we didn't have the ability to run other routes? Is that what we're going with? Like, what? No, I really think Seattle's just going to get back to doing what they do. I could be wrong on this, but I'm with you. Like, I don't think, like, them drafting Dwayne Eskridge in the frickin' second round and considering his analytical profile is going to be a difference maker for this offense and get them back to, you know, top five passing rates. I don't see that, man. And at some point, look, Russell Wilson, what he's done in his career has been just insane. It's been ridiculous as far as his efficiency on a touchdown basis, on everything, basically. And he's overcome yearly so much horribleness in Seattle, whether it's the offensive line being under pressure, just basically being a magician, snap after snap after snap after snap. Like, I mean, that's basically what we've come to expect for Russ. And I'm not saying that's going away, but it's hard to understand Seattle going back to being a top five passing rate team. Like, for me, if you're really going to lean into that, or you think that's in a range of outcomes, then part of that is you're leaning into Dwayne Eskridge, because past that, what's different in this offense what's going to push the needle back to them passing? Like, I don't see Eskridge as being that needle mover. Like, people talk about, is Rashad Bateman, like, the needle mover for Baltimore?
Or that's what I was going to say. If they got, like, a Bateman or a Terrace Marshall or someone, maybe. Maybe I could get on board with
that. Eskridge ain't that dude, man. Like, he's not that guy.
I will,
like,
say with Russ, if I miss out on the top five quarterbacks, there's really three quarterbacks that I would like to get in that scenario. One would be Herbert, one would be Russell Wilson, and one would be Jalen Hurts. So he's still in that, like, I'd be fine with him if I don't get one of the top five quarterbacks, but there's a reason he's not ranked consensually in the top five. It's because the lack of passing attempts does cap his ceiling a bit, but still just an elite player.
Yeah, I mean, I think you put him in the top 12, and where you want to stick him in the top 12, that's totally fine. I think he's going to sit here and still pull a rabbit out of his hat. He's going to be a really good quarterback for us in fantasy purposes and DFS and what have you. But I don't think that he's going to get the passing rate to be like MVP and top three and all these other different things. Like, I just don't see that happening. So if we're talking about, like, we don't see the passing rate coming back, then how high should we be on Chris Carson, Adam? Because I think he's a top 20 back. He's fine. Where he's going in drafts, I think just because the RB thirst, he's going to continue to climb in ADP, probably settling in as an early third round pick in a lot of drafts right now. And if you want to go that direction, that's fine. I don't hate it. I really, really don't. But there are also a lot of really, really good receivers going in that vicinity in drafts, or will be in the third and fourth rounds of drafts. Where you're not talking about, okay, is Chris Carson going to split carries with Rashad Penny to an extent? Or is he getting touchdown equity lost because of Russell Wilson? Or all of those things. Whereas you're looking at other wide receivers in that parts of drafts where it's like, oh man, like, there's some guys falling here that have like 130 target upside, 140, 150, like, you have wide receivers going in that range. Like, we're talking about the Michael Thomases, the Keenan Allens of the world, Allen Robinsons of the world. And it's like, I mean, how high can I be on Chris Carson if he's going around these wide receivers that are going to see legit locked-in volume? Like, should I be higher on him? Because I find myself a little bit lower than a lot of other people.
I don't know if it sounds like you're lower on Carson. It's just you're higher on the receivers going where he goes in drafts.
That's fair.
And that's perfectly fine. I've said it a ton of times. I think Chris Carson is the most underrated running back in the NFL. When healthy, he is incredible. And yes, he's missed time, but he has not missed as many games as the fantasy community makes it out that he does. So, Yeah, he's like a top 18 running back for me. I think the receiving touchdowns that start the season last year were a little bit fluky, but I'm not really worried about Rashad Penny. And again, if Seattle is still convinced that they want to run the football as much as they have been, Chris Carson's going to benefit and get, you know, 18 touches a game with a little bit of upside for more. So he's a rock solid running back too, with like back end running back one upside. But I do agree, like the receivers that go in that range, especially because Michael Thomas isn't going as high as he did a couple years ago. And a lot of the players that you mentioned, it does make it less exciting to take Chris Carson. But also, like you said, you got to start at least two running backs in every league. And after Chris Carson's like right before that drop off too, you know, like it's Carson, it's like Miles Sanders and Jacobs and Montgomery. And then the drop off, you know, he's right before that range where the drop off hits. For me, it's like Mike Davis is like the start of the drop off. Kareem Hunt, mm-hmm. Raheem Mostert, like there's question marks a lot about those guys. Not a ton of question marks with Chris Carson.
No, I don't disagree, and I have him before that drop off as well. For me, it's parsing out. Okay, I don't want to draft Chris Carson in the third round because of the wide receivers, but if he falls into the fourth round, yes, I'll hit the draft button there. But I considering the players he's being drafted around, if he does sneak up into the third round, then I'm out. But if I am in a draft room and he does fall into the fourth, I'm willing to sit here and make the plunge there. Other talented players in this offense, are you willing to make the plunge on Gerald Everett? I know we've talked about him a lot, Adam. I'm still in, man. I'm still extremely high on him going into this season. I think his red zone equity in this offense is going to be good. We're talking about passing volume. Tight ends don't have to get a lot of volume to sit here and be good, man. They just have to sit here and get the touchdowns. That is the lifeblood of tight ends, that and routes. I think Everett could be the guy in this passing offense. Are you still with me there?
I would feel a lot better about it if Seattle would open up the playbook, obviously, because he's going to be at best third, maybe fourth in targets on this team. Obviously, okay. Like, we didn't talk about Metcalf or Tyler Lockett.
We know where they're going, man. They're going to be top 27 wide receivers in every draft. That's what's going to happen. Top 30.
Yeah. I'm a little bit lower on Metcalf than the consensus. Like, I don't have him as like a top 10 receiver like a lot of others to, but I have him as a top 14 guy. So I'm not like low on him. But yeah, like I'm such a believer in the talent of Gerald Everett. I obviously wanted the Bills to sign him. Just after the catch, he's as good as any tight end in the league outside of George Kittle. Like, he's that good. 6 yards after the catch per reception last year, that was top five in the league. He just needs to run routes. And if he can run routes over Will Disley, there is a path to like a, you know, a top 12 ceiling, which again is nothing for tight end. But when he's going as like the tight end 20, and if you're missing out on tight ends and you're looking for somebody to stream, that has value. He's reunited with Shane Waldron, who was the Rams passing game coordinator when Everett was in Los Angeles. So I think there's a nice connection there. He's interesting. I've been drafting him late in a lot of drafts, and I'm going to continue to do so. Just depends on if they play him and let him run more routes than Will Disley.
I think that he could sit here and take over the tight end position. I just think that if we believe that targets are earned and snaps and routes are earned based off of talent, I honestly, and this is not a slide to Will Disley because the guy has been productive, I think that Gerald Everett is a really, really fantastic NFL talent. The guy just needs the damn volume, and I think he possibly could get it this year in Seattle. So, still in on him, man. Moving over to San Francisco, last team in the NFC West. What are your expectations for Trey Lance? Do you think he starts week one? If not, when are we going to see this dude? I think that he is going to be the determinant of when he starts personally. Like, if he goes out and he just stink bombs preseason, then he's going to sit. If he goes out and he shows out, then I think he starts week one. But do you see it differently?
I think he's going to have to be really, really, really good in the preseason and have to have like a real command of the offense just because he's so raw to the point where like San Francisco needs to see like, whoa, this is coming very natural to him to feel confident starting him week one. So I'm definitely giving Jimmy Garoppolo the edge. If Trey Lance had a huge, long track record in college and everything, I would have a little bit different of a tune, but I don't think anybody expects him to not play at all this year. And if he does, we know the upside. I mean, as a runner, he's incredible. He's got a huge arm. And this offense is just, it just schemed up so well for, especially when you look at the offensive pieces they have. George Kittle's going to be healthy. Deebo Samuel hopefully is going to be healthy. And then Brandon Ayuk emerged last year. I mean, he is going to be a, like, when he's active and he's starting, he is going to undoubtedly, you know, put up QB1 numbers. Like, that's going to happen.
Yep. I mean, I think that his rushing equity is going to be high enough to where, yes. And the other thing about it is I think Lance could be on the field earlier than what some are projecting. And I don't know if he definitely has to, like, light it up. Because this offense is, like you're talking about, like, there's a lot of talent around him. And I think they're going to scheme up easy completions for him, man. I think that, like, whether they're still going to be a run-heavy offense. Like, that's one thing that I think people don't really understand still about, like, Kyle Shanahan's offenses. That if they can run the ball, they're going to run the ball. So the passing volume, I don't think, is going to be immense. It's not going to be extreme. Like, I would be surprised if they were higher than, like, 16th in the NFL in passing attempts this year. And that's with Lance, without Lance, with Jimmy G under center. They're going to run the damn ball. That's basically what Shanahan does, unless he doesn't have the running back or the offensive line to execute that. So I think he could start week one and they just ease him in a run-heavy offense and basically ask him to do what he's comfortable in the offense. But it's, I do think it's an interesting talking point that maybe it's still up in the air, but I really think he just starts from the get-go, man. Talked about they're going to be running the damn ball. What do you see for the backfield? Like, is, you know my love for Trey Sermon. That's why I'm getting you to kick this off, dude. What happens in this backfield? Is it Raheem Mostert? Is it Trey Sermon? Is it both or none?
So, I'm, as long as they're close in ADP, which they still are right now, I'm, cover your ears, I'm taking Raheem Mostert every time if they're within a round or whatever, like they are, because he's going to start the season. Like, Jeff Wilson out helps Trey Sermon, obviously, but nobody's talking about how it might help Raheem Mostert, who's been nothing short of fantastic when on the field. Now, the problem is he's missed a lot of time, but the running scheme, the San Francisco offensive line is elite. Trent Williams last year was just absolutely just clearing paths for running backs. He was incredible. So it would be different if they were going like 5-6 rounds apart, but Trey Sermon's, you know, going like the 7th or 6th round, and Mostert's going the 6th or 7th mm-hmm. round. Like, they're going a round apart. So for me, I'll take the guy that I think is going to start the season. Obviously, the injury concerns are there, but, like, I mean, you can take both if you want, but the problem, like I said, they're going so close to each other right now, which makes it difficult.
I mean, look, if they're going that close to each other, I understand that, like, I think both these backs are going to be involved, dude, and I lean for Trey Sermon because I think that he can... You know, everybody knows, and here's the thing about it. I didn't jump on the bandwagon at the last second. Like, this wasn't like, oh, San Francisco drafted him. Oh, now I'm going to sit here and talk about how much I love Trey Sermon.
You were touting for San Francisco to draft him.
Yes! I mean, dude, you can go back. People can go back to the prospect profile. We talked about Trey Sermon. I talked about it then. I was higher on him than a lot of other people in the industry. And now that he got the landing spot where I was like, I want him to go to a zone rushing attack, and that's what happened. I was like, please getting him to Atlanta or San Francisco, and it's wheels up, and I'm still there, dude. Like, I think that his talent can show out. I think this offense is hand in glove made for him. Now, is it the same for Raheem Mostert? Yes. I just lean on younger, fresher legs. I'm willing he's not going in a spot of drafts. Like, if we were talking about Trey Sermon as a 5th-round pick, a 4th-round pick. And I know that sounds insane, but the RB thirst is real, and the closer we get to week one, it ain't slowing down, man, especially if we have injuries. But where Trey Sermon's going right now, I mean, in a lot of best ball drafts you're doing, you're talking about a guy that's in the 6th, 7th round, and at that spot, I think it's still fine. Because, again, I said, like, I think this rushing attack, they're going to run the ball, and they're going to be really, really good at doing it. And so, if you want to go Raheem Mostert, you want to take the discount, that's fine. I don't hate that. But if I'm going to sit here and plant my flag on one of these backs in this backfield to take over or be the guy or be the most productive guy out of the backfield, I'm an old OG truther for Raheem Mostert, and I love his talent. But I'm going with Trey Sermon here, man. Like, he is the goal line back. He has the size. He has the speed. He has the vision and the fit for this offense. He's the guy that I'm going to sit here and push my chips to the middle on. Out of the running game and into the pass catchers, any of these guys you're willing to invest in, for me, it's George Kittle or it's nobody. When Kittle was on the field last year, he was still the alpha. He had a 27% target share. I'm not going to gravitate to Brandon Ayuk. I talked about the passing volume.
I'm off Brandon Ayuk, man. I like him, but he benefited from no Debo and no Kittle for like a ton of that season. And where he's going, I'll take the Bengals receivers, maybe not Tyler Boyd, because I think Ayuk has a higher ceiling than Boyd, but I'll take, you know, Chase and Higgins. I'll take all three Steelers receivers. Obviously, like, if we get any sort of indication that Deshaun Watson's playing, Brandon Cooks is easily ahead of him for me. I'm out on Brandon Ayuk at his ADP. I'm okay with Debo, but again, where he's going, like, you can get some of the rookie receivers like Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, sophomore receivers like Judy. So I'm with you, man. It's Kittle or no one for me. Not that I don't like them as players, because I love Debo as well. Like, I absolutely love Debo Samuel. I just don't know what the volume's going to look like if Kittle's healthy, because he still, in my opinion, like you said, is the alpha in this passing game. And I like other receivers that are going around Ayuk or later.
I don't really, and so here's my whole problem, because, and I don't know if you've seen the same amount of this on social media and people, this is more prevalent when rookie draft season was a little bit higher than it is now. People are like, oh yeah, I mean, you were sleeping on Brandon Ayuk last year, how'd that work out for you? And I'm like, if you were projecting for everybody else in this passing game to get hurt and Brandon Ayuk to have above a 30% target share, then kudos to you. You need to go enter the lottery. You need to play DFS. You need to sit here and start stacking your millions. Because, Lord help me, I didn't see that coming, and there's no way in hell you did either. And for context for this passing offense, if we're projecting health, and George Kittle and Debo are on the field, there's not going to be enough volume for him to pay off at his ADP if you're drafting him as a wide receiver too. It's just not going to happen.
There was that
happen.
Stretch down towards the end of the season where he had double-digit targets in four of five games.
He had above a 30% target share. I mean, dear God, Adam, how is he getting that this year?
He is not. That's not. Jeez. He's not even coming close to that. So
no. No way, man. So, I'm not saying I dislike the player. He's crazy talented. But what we saw last year is not coming back. We talked about it. Like, unless they have injuries. Like, this is like, and not, I'm not going to say like the perfect parallel to Tyler Higbee. But like, if you're projecting for Brandon Ayuk, and people are like, well, in the fantasy points per game, he got a 30% target share, and he was the only, there was only two wide receivers, one of them being Devontae Adams, ha 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 ha, being better than him over that stretch, it's the perfect storm, Adam, and unless the injuries come back, we're not going to see that happen. So you're overdrafting Brandon Ayuk. You're putting stuff in his basket that's just not there, whether it's passing volume, whether it's target share, whether it's all these different things. That's just not in his range of outcomes, because this team is not going to be top 10 in passing attempts.
I would rather have Galladay, Kupp, Deontay, Lockett, Odell, Chase, Juju, Claypool, Higgins, Chark, Robbie Anderson, all those guys over Brandon Ayuk.
I don't disagree with you, man. Like, I'm fine with taking all the shots on those players over him, especially like you brought up, like taking T. Higgins. Or you know how much I love Chase Claypool, man. Like, I'm willing to sit here and go and toss my chips there and there instead of like, okay, can we foresee a 25% plus target share for Brandon Ayuk on a passing offense that's going to be near bottom of the league or at the very best? You're hoping league average. I can't buy into that. There's just not a way, man. So before we get up out of here, give me your breakout, give me your bust.
Yeah, I already mentioned the bust. Tyler Higbee. I'm just not convinced that he's going to run the routes, even though Gerald Everett's gone. So I'm out on him. Breakout for this is tough. It really is, because I don't view Cam Akers as a breakout. Really, I guess he can be, but we kind of saw him start to break out last year, so I didn't want to talk about him. So I'm actually going to go to Seattle for a late breakout for Gerald Everett because I'm so high on the player and high on the talent. And it's also more – it also has to do with – I had a tough time finding a breakout here because this, nobody from Seattle other than Gerald Everett can even be considered for a breakout, right? Lockett's established. No. Metcalf broke out last year. Carson's established.
No way.
Arizona, Hopkins, no. I'm not – I don't like – I could have used Edmonds as a bust too. I'll throw Edmonds as a bust because I'm clearly not high on him either. And then San Francisco – Kittle, we know. Ayuk broke out last year, and I don't like him as much. Debo, I don't see breaking out. So, that kind of process of elimination, too.
I mean, look, I'm actually going to say Cam Akers here for the breakout, because I think you can use him. Because we didn't see full run. We didn't see it the entire season. It's not like he's coming off like an 800 rushing yard season, and we're saying, okay, but if he gets to 1,200 or 1,000, that's the breakout. It's like... I mean, a lot of people were very disappointed. I know that, like, they're back in now because of the stretch run and stuff. But I think that he can crush, and we're drafting him in the first round or, you know, top of the second, where he falls for you, as an RB1, we're in for the breakout. So I think that if we're expecting that, then I'm going to put him as my breakout. If it's not going to be Cam Akers and you're like, okay, well, that doesn't count, then yes, I'm going to go with Trey Sermon out of this division. I think this rushing offense, for all the reasons I discussed... And yeah, I'm with you, man. My bust is Tyler Higbee. I can't rank him as a top 12 tight end, top 10. I think that people are looking at false signal when they're drafting him as such. I'm totally out on Tyler Higbee. Too much talent around him, and I think that what we're looking at as far as like saying all these things could possibly come back, I've already spilled my rant about that. So, all right, everyone, that is the NFC West. Adam and I are going to be back. Later this week, we got a mock draft, and we're going to see her dice it up with Mike Wright. Man. It's going to be awesome, baby.
Also, if you want to join this mock draft, it's myself, D-Bro, and Mike Wright of the Fantasy Footballers. That means there's 9 spots open. It's a 12-team draft. Oof. I will be tweeting out the link Thursday morning. We're doing the draft at 5 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. If you can't make it at that time, please do not join the draft. If you're free Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern, to do a mock draft that we'll be talking about live on the podcast. I'll post a link Thursday morning. Join. Be ready by 5. It'll be a fun time. We'll talk in the chat, stuff like that. It'll be a great time. So look for that on Thursday morning on Twitter.
Yeah, hit up those notifications. You need to be following Adam on Twitter. Do not want to miss that, man. If you want to draft against us three, we're going to be dicing up teams, talking about some rosters we like, dislike, and all that kind of stuff. So draft against us. Get up in there. It's going to feel quick. It's going to go quick. For Faye the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.